Today is August 11th, 2021. This year is going by fast. This is episode number 553, The Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, a bandito in a bordello. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/context machine. That'll take you to the Facebook group for the show. Now, today I am delighted to be joined by Jeff, but it's not the gamut variant. Today, we have Jeff Butts. Hey, Jeff.
It's the Butts variant.
It's the Butts variant. Yes.
How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Good. How have you been?
I've been good, man. It's good to be back on ACM. It's been about a year now, I think.
Wow, has it been that? Okay, that's ridiculous. That's on me.
It has. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, not entirely. I've been busy.
A
little bit MIA. I've been a little busy.
Yeah, you've had a lot of things going on. But you're here today, and that's what counts.
I'm here today. And
you've been writing more for us recently.
Yep.
By the time this airs, you probably will have written a lot more. I'm not saying that I'm slow to actually get these posted. I'm just saying that I'm slow to actually get these posted.
Now, see, you blew it. I was going to say, tell me you're slow to post these podcasts without telling me you're slow to post these podcasts.
That's too much time on the old TikTok. So, listen, today's show is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. I'm going to tell you about how to get a free job post later in the episode. But before we get to that, you had some excitement about things that a thing that doesn't necessarily have a history of generating excitement, or maybe it does have a history of generating excitement, and then we get kicked in the nads. Anyway, Mac gaming.
Yeah. And you know, now that I think about it, I hope we're not about to get kicked in the nads again. But there are a lot more games available, at least on my Intel-based Mac, than there ever were before.
Like what? You said that to me pre-show, and my first question is, where?
Steam.
Okay, Steam has been supporting the Mac for a long time.
They have, but it seemed like it was hit or miss. There were almost no decent games available through there, and it seems like it's gotten a lot better. Or maybe I've just had my head in my sand.
Okay, I do have lots of questions. And first of all, let me tell you, one of the reasons why I have lots of questions as opposed to opinions is because I've been stuck in this like infinite loop with them where I can't get support unless I change my email address, and I can't change my email address without talking to support. Now, it's been several years since I actually tried that, but it has been super frustrating, and because of that, I kind of haven't thought much about Steam for a long time. That said, tell me what you're seeing.
I'll agree with you on the support issue, because I have had problems in the past getting signed into my Steam account because I didn't have access to that email address.
Oh, and it also seemed that for a while their stuff was being blocked by Mac.com, by Apple's servers for some reason. That's why I couldn't reset my own my own email address, because I couldn't get their various confirmation emails.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, yeah. So, I mean, now granted, I gave up on gaming for quite a while and didn't really dive into it further. And then through various reasons, my youngest daughter wanted us to play Rust together. And initially I said, well, sweetie, I'm on a Mac. That's not going to work for me. And she's like, Dad, it's available through Steam. It's got the Apple logo on the store. And I was like, really? So I reinstalled Steam. Of course, I couldn't get into my old account, so I just created a new one. I had almost nothing invested in the old account anyway, so it didn't matter. And sure enough, Rust is there. The latest version of The Sims is there. There's a ton of other ones. Fallout Shelter. 7 Days to Die, I believe, has max support.
How old are these games, though?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't. Because
Fallout Shelter is not new, man. It's like, I mean,
right. But the latest patches and the latest downloadable content, all of that is there for the Mac.
Well, that's good.
So, granted, it's not a new game by any stretch of the imagination, but all of the new expansions are available on the Mac, which really surprised me. Rust, I don't know how old Rust is. I don't think Rust is all that old, but I could be wrong.
Okay, well, so have you looked over at the Mac App Store too, or you know, other places?
Oh yeah. I mean, and Apple Arcade is great. There are some good options there. But you know, a lot of the games that are cross-platform that you might want to play with other Windows users, mm-hmm. you're not going to find them.
Yeah.
But through Steam, a lot of them you can find. My current obsession is Stardew Valley, which, granted, that's a little bit older. I think it's 3 or 4 years old, but it actually runs better on my Mac Mini than it does on my roommate's Windows laptop.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so. I'm wondering. Did you just start looking at Steam? I mean, because again, Steam has been supporting the Mac for quite a while. In years and years and years ago, when I was able to access my Steam account, I found that Mac support was sometimes a little bit sketchy.
Right.
But that's been a very, very long time, and my assumption is the underlying technology. The emulation layers that they're using to make this possible, if it is an emulation layer, whatever they're doing to make the Mac versions possible, I'm mm-hmm. assuming it is improved.
I think so, but you know, understand my I went away from gaming for a long time.
Sure.
I think up until the last month, the last time I had installed and run Steam was probably in 2016 or 2017.
Okay.
And when I couldn't find any decent games that I liked, I just said, all right, heck with it, and went on my merry way.
Sure.
Now, they've come a long way since then. There's now a Steam Link app that you can download on your iPhone, and a lot of the games that you have in your Steam library, you can play on your iPhone or your iPad. I haven't gotten that to work yet, but I'm told that it works for many people.
Okay.
I'm running betas, so that's probably my problem.
Okay. All right. I guess I don't know listeners, what do you think here? Like what is the current status of Mac gaming? I mean, you know, gaming on the Mac has always been something that like Apple would embrace it, and then they would, you know, like
back away from
it. Yeah, or like not follow through with embracing it.
But you know, I don't know that. Can we really blame Apple entirely, or is it a factor of developers not wanting to port their games over to platforms that maybe aren't going to see a lot of.
Well, I mean, there's a chicken and egg thing there, right? I mean, if Apple had had the support, if Apple had done the things that Microsoft was doing and that Intel was doing to support gaming on the Wintel platform, there would have been more. There would have been more games on the Mac. In fact, it is. I believe someone is welcome to correct me if I'm somehow wrong, but Apple's very specific and known hardware configurations for all of its devices should make developing on the Mac easier to support on the publisher side. And that, I mean, that's always been a big, potentially big weapon or arrow in Apple's gaming quiver, but they've, you know, never really tried to do anything with it. Now, there is certainly something to be said for the fact that Mac gamers tend to be more casual and that the hardcore gamers and, like, you know, especially the first person shooter fans and things like that are going off to either the console world or the Wintel world. But again,
if they're going to the Wintel world, the really hardcore ones are building their own machines.
Fair enough. And I guess one could also make the argument that Apple could have done a better job of staying up to date with video cards, and Apple could have worked better with both NVIDIA and AMD to make sure that their cards supported Macs that actually, at least Mac Pros, which, you know, LOL, the Mac Pro has been kind of a joke for a long time anyway.
Let's just get a Mac Pro and game on that.
Well, back in the day, though, when the Cheese Grater Mac Pro was not necessarily an arm and a leg, that was something that would have been potentially. I'm looking, by the way, at a really cool looking game called Unite Imperial China. The $50 game on the Mac App Store. That looks really interesting, but I can't tell if this video is actual gameplay or if it's cinematics or, you know.
That drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's always hard to hard to tell. But anyway, that looks like a fun game. So I think one of the things, like, I remember there was I have a leather jacket that I bought on the eBay that was a Sprockets jacket for the Sprockets team at Apple.
Okay.
And do you remember Game Sprockets?
Yeah.
So for those who don't, back long before, but before Steve Jobs came back, there was this thing called Game Sprockets, and it was basically a bunch of gaming APIs and hooks into Mac OS before OS X for developers to be able to do everything they needed to do to make their games run. And it was one of the things that Steve Jobs killed. Steve Jobs is always sort of was disdainful of gaming in general. But then as iOS and the iPad became more and more, you know, more and more games were being played on these devices, and these devices were being bought to play games, they started taking gaming a little more seriously on mobile. But I don't know. I think Apple gets a lot of blame for gaming not being bigger on the Mac as a whole. I think Apple gets just a ton of blame for that. Inconsistent messaging, inconsistent supporting of technologies, inconsistent interest from within the company towards the field, and then not doing enough, in my humble opinion, to support those third-party developers and publishers that were out there. So, I don't know. That's my take, man. Valve and Steam have sort of picked up some of the slack from Apple to make gaming better on the Mac, but even still, the Mac is definitely the second best platform for Steam. Maybe the third best, because don't they support consoles to? I can't remember. Steam?
I don't. Maybe through Steam Link. Well,
if it's just the two, it's the second. Oh, Linux.
Yeah, they do support Linux, and I think they have their own hardware as well that you can.
They do have that, the Steam Box, is that right? Or did that get canceled? It's a good thing we did our homework before we started recording this.
Yeah, yeah, and I would look it up, except that my display has gone to sleep, and I don't want to type.
Fair enough. Why, do you have a clicker keyboard?
No, but my mouse.
Steam hardware. Let's see what there is with the Steam hardware. Well, anyway, we didn't do our homework on the Steam hardware, and the point is that the Mac is definitely not the best platform to play games on Steam, but it is great that you're seeing more stuff there and that you feel like support is improving. I hope that certainly continues.
Yeah, I do too, because, you know, sometimes I need a good game to play around on.
Yeah, for sure. We all do. I seemingly have less and less time to play games, but I enjoy them.
It's called the Steam Deck.
Steam Deck these days. Okay.
Yep. Oh, it hasn't started shipping yet. It begins shipping in December.
Well, there was an earlier hardware device that was supposed to be a thing a while back.
Okay.
For whatever that's worth. All right. Let's move on to something that you proposed pre-show. Now, funny enough, just yesterday on, so we're recording, you and I are recording this on Wednesday, August 11th, as mentioned. Mm-hmm. And on Tuesday, August 10th, on TDO, I talked a little bit about this, but it wasn't the main focus of the segment, but you wanted to talk about the Coinbase debit card, and in that,
yeah,
I'm hugely into cryptos. I thought that was a great idea.
Right? Yeah, I threw that out there because, you know, I've started playing around with crypto, and when Coinbase announced the Coinbase debit card, I joined the wait list and then proceeded to wait forever. And just recently, I finally got bumped up to, hey, now you can get yours.
Okay.
And so I applied for it. I'm still waiting for the physical card to come in the mail, but they immediately give you your card number so you can add it into Apple Wallet or other inferior digital wallets.
Sure. Or just use it online.
Right. Yeah. And so I've used it exactly once, and it works just like any other card that I have in my Apple Wallet, except that in my case it was the very next day, but they say that it can take 3 to 5 business days. After the transaction completely posts, you get crypto rewards.
Yeah, it settles. 1%,
right. Once it settles, you can get either 1% back in Bitcoin or 4% back in Stellar Lumens.
Gotcha. 4% back is obviously fantastic, depending on what Stellar Lumens do in the future.
If Stellar Lumens, right. You know, if it tanks, then you're in trouble. But, you know, it's free money, in essence.
Well, it is free money, but there are plenty of cashback cards that are available too. So it is not just free money, because you could choose free dollars with hundreds of different bank cards. Okay, sure. So let's talk about, first of all, let's explain what the Coinbase debit card does. With the Coinbase debit card, you use it like any debit card, which means you use it like any branded credit card. But it is drawing directly on your balance that is within Coinbase. Now, my understanding was that it would spend out of whichever cryptos you have. Is that correct? Because I haven't actually applied for one. So
yes and no. When you set up your card, you choose which wallet for it to draw off of.
Oh, okay. Wait, so, hold on. You can't change that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can change that at any time.
So rather than it drawing on your savings, your checking account, which is what most debit cards do, the Coinbase debit card is drawing off of your cryptocurrencies that you're holding on Coinbase.
Correct.
Okay.
And, you know, say you, and yes, you can change it. Now, what happens is they may charge you a transaction fee depending on where you're pulling it out of. If you're pulling it from USD Coin, there is no transaction.
USD Coin is a so-called stablecoin. It is correct. Designed to be pegged to the dollar. So it neither increases nor decreases, theoretically, in correct. Value in relation to the dollar. So it's always, you know, a USD stablecoin is always worth a dollar, theoretically. Right.
In theory, yeah. And I haven't seen it change in the year and blah, blah, blah months I've been following it.
No, I follow it too. It's always within, you know, a fraction of a penny.
Yeah.
To a dollar.
I've never seen it change. You can also choose, I don't know if all tradable assets are compatible with the Coinbase card. I haven't looked yet. But I know that I could have chosen my Algorand wallet, my Bitcoin wallet, any of the other ones that I have money in.
And that probably includes most of the ones that you can get free units in from doing the quizzes.
Yeah, yeah. And also the staking rewards and things like that.
Right. Okay.
That's what I tend to focus on.
Here is what there's like a coin on this with the heads and a tail side with this debit card. The one is that Coinbase has essentially overnight suddenly made it possible for you to spend your cryptocurrency anywhere you want to.
Correct.
Okay. Here's the thing
without going through a lot of hassle of cashing it out and transferring it to my bank.
Yeah, and very specifically, there are very few retailers that will accept any kind of cryptocurrency for payment as of this writing.
Correct.
And honestly, for the foreseeable future. And I say that as a cryptocurrency fan. So yeah. Coinbase, again, has made it possible with a wave of a magic wand for you to spend your cryptocurrency anywhere that'll take a credit card, or at least, is it a MasterCard or a Visa?
It's a Visa.
It's a Visa, okay.
So anywhere that'll take Visa.
So the flip side is that a whole lot of people that have cryptos are doing so because they're hodling. They're holding on for dear life. Because they hope or dream or wish or expect for the value of that cryptocurrency to increase in the future, because historically that's what they've done heretofore.
Right.
So if you're spending your Bitcoin at 7-Eleven, you're willing to not hodl. You're willing to actually just spend. And for a lot of people, that'll be very attractive. And for other people, it will not be attractive. But at the same time, you can also spend your stable coins, which kind of brings it back to the realm of being much closer to a bank card, because Coinbase offers interest on stable coin deposits.
Correct. 0.14% API, I believe.
Really? Is that it?
Tiny amount.
I thought it was
tiny.
I thought it was more than that.
Not for USDC.
I believe you, but I'm looking.
Yeah, go ahead.
The number of typos that I just did are pretty impressive. let's see here. Okay, so not US dollar, USD coin. And, well, I'm just going to assume the, oh, you're right. Earn 0.15% API. Yeah. And that is still more than you can get on most dollar savings accounts.
Oh, you know what? They increased it. It's now 0.15%.
Yeah, 0.15%. I'm sorry. I thought that's what you said.
I swear yesterday it was 0.14%.
Might have been. And it is very hard at this point for most people to be able to get 0.1% on a savings account with a bank. So it is high. It's next to nothing, but it is next to nothing that is more than the next to nothing that banks are paying right now because interest rates are historically low.
Yeah. I mean, now, you know, is that where I'm going to keep my money that I really want to get staking rewards on? No, not really.
No, but
that's going to go in Algorand or Cosmos or Tezos. But
yeah, I've got Polkadot sitting at Kraken, earning 12%.
Really?
Paid out every two weeks. Excuse me, paid out twice a week.
Okay.
So it compounds. The 104 times a year, which is
Algorand fantastic. Is daily. Yeah, Algorand pays out daily.
Yep.
Which is kind of nice.
I've got some Algorand that I got from. By the way, Coinbase does these things. They're essentially paid promos. But if you take a quiz to learn, or you watch a short tutorial, very, very short tutorial, on a given crypto, there's all kinds of noise outside my house. I don't know what's going on. But you watch this very short quiz, a very, very short tutorial, then take a quiz, and you get rewarded with a tiny amount of that cryptocurrency. And it's, you know, if you're wanting to dabble in cryptos and get some for free, it's a great way to do it.
Dude, or not so tiny, depending on how you look at it. I got $10 worth of Stellar Lumens last week.
Mm. That is one of the bigger ones, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I was on the wait list for that for a year and months, but
right.
Yeah, it popped up last week, and I said, bet, I'm on.
And there are many, many others, too. I will have a link in the show notes to Coinbase if you're interested. But here is the thing about this debit card. You do get your cash back in the form of a crypto that you have chosen.
Right.
So and it you, is a way
you
to...
You only have two choices right now.
Okay. It's Bitcoin and Stellar Lumens.
Bitcoin or Stellar.
Yeah. Right.
And as previously noted, Bitcoin, you get 1% back. Stellar Lumens, you get 4%.
So I have a very high risk tolerance. My risk tolerance is way higher than a whole lot of people's. So for me, the idea of getting rewards back in the form of a cryptocurrency is fantastic because I am this willfully optimistic believer in the future of cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. Your mileage may vary. That's your Jeff's mileage may vary. And anyone who's listening to this, your mileage may vary and you may not be interested in that sort of thing. To me, I'm very interested in it. I don't do it through Coinbase. I do it through BlockFi, but it's the same kind of thing. You're getting crypto back as a reward, and if the value of that crypto increases in the future, that means that the 1.5% you get, what is Coinbase paying? Is it 2% or 1% or 1.5%?
1% for Bitcoin, 4%.
Oh, that's right. You said that. Yeah. So if the value of that crypto increases in the future, then the rewards that you got for making your purchases will essentially increase retroactively if you keep it.
Yeah. And Stellar right now is up. This is a tiny, tiny amount, but the 58% or 58 cents that I got back on my last transaction is now 67 cents.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Cha-ching! Start thumbing through the Lambo catalog. Right. So there are other ways to do this too. As I mentioned, BlockFi is a site that pays their whole thing is basically paying interest on crypto deposits, mm-hmm. like a bank with a savings account. And then they turn around and they loan out your deposits to other people at higher interest rates. And that's why they do it, just like a bank. They have a credit card that pays 1.5% back in Bitcoin with some higher rewards for like the first 3 months, I think. After that, it would be 1.5%. Except for this credit card, you're paying through dollars. You know, it's not coming from your deposits with BlockFi. It's tied to your bank account. You pay it off with your bank account in dollars. So it's a way of converting some of your dollars passively to Bitcoin in making your purchases. There is another company called SoFi that is an online bank. They offer ordinary banking services, you know, loans and checking and savings and probably, I know they have a credit card. And you can get, I believe, 2% back with their card, and you could choose to get Bitcoin if that's what you wanted to do. So again, it's an ordinary bank like any other online bank. It's not a crypto bank or anything like that, but they do offer this cryptocurrency in cashback rewards. And then there is also what's the other one that I had? I had BlockFi, SoFi, Coinbase. I thought there was another one. Give me just a second. Venmo. Venmo is also doing, Kelly was the one who pointed this out. Cash back in the form of crypto also.
Yep, I saw that. That's interesting.
Right. So all there you have it. These rewards cards are a way to get some crypto without you directly buying it.
Right.
If you're so inclined. Just remember, like my long-standing thing is that for a long time, Dave Hamilton and I would both say that, you know, in 5 years, Bitcoin could be worth $50,000, $5,000, or $0. Right. And we have already passed the $50,000 mark once. But, you know, cryptocurrencies could be regulated out of existence. They could be compromised in some way where the value plummets to nothing. They could be supplanted by a new generation of crypto that makes the old generations completely obsolete and worthless. So there is definitely risk in being involved in cryptocurrencies. You have to be aware of your own security. You have to be choosing the value of ease of use versus security. Right. And you're kind of responsible for making those choices yourself when it comes to crypto. So if you have a low risk tolerance, stay away. If you have a higher risk tolerance, maybe that's something that you would want to do. I do personally own some Bitcoin. I own some other cryptos, too. And I do have the BlockFi card that I mentioned, all for the sake of full disclosure.
Sure. And I have some Bitcoin. I have some Tezos, Algorand, and now Stellar Lumens.
What about the other ones that Coinbase is doing? Are you on the waiting list?
I'm talking
about the quizzes. I see Compound, Stellar Lumens, AMP.
I've done the all Graph, of those. I've
Clover,
done all those, and then converted them over to the ones that I'm actually getting staking rewards on.
I see. That makes sense.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Compound actually threw me for a loop. When I played with Compound, I actually lost about $40 through Compound because I accidentally sent the wrong type of Compound's tokens or currency to the wrong wallet, and there was just no getting it back.
That is true with most cryptocurrencies. If you send something to the wrong address, it's gone.
Yep. You've just given someone a gift.
That's right. And the beauty, of course, would be is if whoever owns the wallet for that address have lost their own keys, so they can't access the wallet, so they can't even get your gift.
Well,
That's like the ultimate. That's the ultimate like downside of crypto.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I've known people, I've heard of people, and we've seen the news of people who had millions of dollars in crypto that, you know, it became millions of dollars over time and they lost their keys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All kinds of people have lost the keys. They've lost their password. They've lost the keys. They've lost, you know, whatever kind of access it is that they needed, and they can no longer get the cryptos. A not inconsiderable amount. Actually, I bet I can find this. How much Bitcoin is lost? Let's see here. 4% of available Bitcoins is lost each year, according to one research firm.
Wow.
4% of available Bitcoin is lost each year. Don't be one of those people. And then there are possible hacks. There was a major hack just yesterday as of this recording. Mm-hmm. Someone on the Poly network, which is on top of Polygon, which is on top of Ethereum, I think. Hundreds of millions of dollars gone.
And let me bring that back up. The hacker that took it now says that he's returning it.
Huh.
Engadget reported today that this intruder stole about $611 million thanks to an exploit. And now he is, and it was in Ethereum, Shiba Inu, and other digital currencies. And now he sent a token indicating he's ready to surrender and started returning millions in funds.
Well, that's good. Good for him.
Yeah.
Well,
unless he's only doing it because he's caught.
Well, I'm that. You know. Yeah, right. Fair enough. That may or may not be the case, but better to do the right thing for the wrong reasons than to continue to not do the right thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. This all happened through Tokyo-based CoinCheck.
Right. So, cryptos have inherent risk.
Oh yeah.
Your research. You should do your own due diligence. You should understand your own risk tolerance, and you should have a very good understanding of what it is that you're risking. I am not one of these people that says everybody should get into crypto because the pricing fluctuations are way too much for a lot of people to deal with. The risk is too much for some people to deal with. The needed steps you need to take for your own security are, for many people, it's too much to deal with because they're still using like the same password everywhere.
Yeah.
If you're using the same password in every site, first of all, stop.
Right.
But if you are, do not get into crypto.
No. No, it will not end well for you.
It's not likely to end well at the very least.
Right. Right.
Okay. All right. That's Jeff's and Brian's hot take on credit cards that are paying cash back, and then also the security risks and risk tolerance needed for cryptos.
Yep.
All right. So this is a good spot right here. Let me take a second out to tell you about LinkedIn Jobs. I so appreciate LinkedIn Jobs sponsoring this episode of the Apple Context Machine. I very much appreciate that. Now, with LinkedIn Jobs, you can get your job postings in front of the right candidates. You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 750 million people. That's how many people are on LinkedIn at this point. You can focus on candidates with the skills and experience you need. You can use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people. And then you can use the simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you would like to interview and hire. Now, my favorite feature is the dashboard, from which you can manage all of your job postings as well as the candidates for those jobs. super easy to use. It's intuitive. It makes sense. And it is a good way of getting your job in front of people who are qualified to do that job. Now, because you are listening to the Apple Context Machine, you can post your first job for free. All you have to do is go to linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And once again, I want to thank them for sponsoring this episode of ACM. And I would love it if you, my dear listeners, would check them out too. Jeff, our third topic is I'm going to be your stand-in for the guy who hasn't done it yet, because I have not installed any of the betas, not the Mac OS betas or the iOS betas or the iPad betas, but you have been using iOS 15. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And we're expecting iOS 15 in, you know, the usual September, October timeframe.
Yep. About the time that they announce the next device.
Yeah. And iOS 15 has been announced, so we do know that it's coming. And we have seen a lot of the features that are coming. But you've actually been using it. So I thought what we'd do is we talk about your experience so far.
Okay.
All right, lay it on me.
Well, the biggest things that I have played around with so far is you've got more options now. You know, for a long time we've had the Do Not Disturb option on our phones.
Sure, for years.
We could just stop all notifications, you know, until we turn it off. Well, it's gotten a lot more granular now. We now have what are called focus modes that you can set up differently. You can set one up specifically for driving. You can set one up for your work hours, for your personal hours. You can even create custom ones for like when you're working out. And with these, it does the same thing as Do Not Disturb, as in stops you from getting pestered, but it makes it easier to allow other apps and other people to break through.
So,
you know, previously.
Go ahead.
Previously, you know, people could break through and call you either by calling you twice in a certain amount of time or if they were in your favorites list. Well, now you don't have to put them on your favorites list. You can just put it in the settings for that focus mode to allow phone calls or text messages or whatever to come through.
So you can block and allow individual kinds of notifications.
Correct.
And contact attempts.
You can do that on a per person level. You can even do that on an app level. So like if I'm just fed up with dealing with your crap, I can tell my focus mode, don't allow any notifications from Slack.
Which, by the way, when it comes to dealing with me, is just highly recommended anyway.
Well, yeah, that's no. You're one of the better people I know, but you know, I had to put that bit of sarcasm in.
Of course.
But the really annoying apps that you might get hundreds of notifications from, like Facebook or Facebook Messenger, or dear God, why haven't I uninstalled Touch of Modern yet? You can silence those and leave other things going.
Okay, that makes sense, although it seems like one could also just turn off notifications for some of those things, period.
Yeah, but, you know, let's say Facebook Messenger. You want to be able to use Facebook Messenger when you're off work.
Technically, I do not, but go ahead. I understand your point.
For the sake of argument, Bendito in a bordello, you do. You can do that using a focus mode. You know, other... let's flip it around. I want Slack notifications during the day while I'm working, but not at night when I'm trying to get my groove on.
Yeah, how do you enable these focus modes? Like, so now I've set up a focus mode, be it a workout mode, be it a... Brand time Well, focus mode, whatever.
It'll walk you through the initial steps when you go to turn it on. If I remember right, it actually walks you through it when it first tells you that it's available. Or you can go into the settings app and do it there. You can also get to them now from the control center, which I actually had to hunt for Do Not Disturb on my iPhone because I forgot that it was one of the focus modes now.
Ah. Is it not in the control panel?
It is. Yes, it is in the control panel, but it's a different icon.
When you go,
if you don't have one on, in the control panel, it just says focus.
So what happens when you tap that?
When you tap it, it allows you to choose from one of your focus modes.
I see.
So like I have Do Not Disturb, personal, work, sleep, and driving. And then down at the bottom, there's a button, looks like a plus sign, that I can tap on to create a new one.
Okay, but so can you add a specific focus mode to control panel also?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
So they're all there. You tap on the focus mode icon.
Yeah, go ahead.
You tap on the focus mode icon. It gives you a list of all of your focus modes. And then at the bottom is the option to create a new one.
Okay. But can I add Brian Time focus mode as an icon by itself directly to focus to the control panel so that I don't have to first tap on the focus mode icon?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Let me explore that. And when I write the how-to article that is brewing in my mind on how to use focus mode on iOS 15, I'll be sure to include that.
Excellent. That sounds fantastic. Okay, so that's focus mode. Okay, go ahead.
Scheduled notifications or scheduled notification summaries.
Okay.
Rather than getting your email notifications each time they come in, there is now an option where you can have those scheduled so that they will show up for you at a predetermined time of day. I think mine are set for 8 a.m., 2 p.m., 6 p.m., and 10 p.m. So rather than getting hit with each one, which is great if you're an email addict and you just can't stand to let an email notification go unanswered.
Sure.
You can except me a lot of times.
Oh, I see.
I can't stand to let them go. If I see the badge, it drives me bonkers until I take care of it.
Huh.
Maybe it's my OCD. I don't know.
Well, but that's clearly your OCD.
You know what? You're right. But I'm not alone in that. I know I'm not.
I have a doctorate in OCD. Wait, no, I don't have that. But that's definitely what it sounds like. I mean, but anyway, yeah. So you can do, continue the thought.
Right. So you only get those notifications a couple times a day instead of each time an email comes in. And even better, if you so choose, it won't even show, if I remember right, it won't even show the badge icon that it's there waiting for you. I have to double check that. Focus mode, you can hide the badge icons. I'm not sure about scheduled notifications.
You can choose to hide the badge icons?
Yep.
On an individual app-by-app basis?
On an individual app-by-app basis.
Can you also hide all badge notifications? Or do you have to do it on an individual basis? Do you see what I'm asking?
I do.
Jeff is looking.
I'm looking. Yeah, sorry. I can't remember. And I'm not seeing it as an option right away. Maybe it's under home screen. In focus mode, at least, you turn it on for everything in that focus mode. It hides notification badges on home screen apps. You can also choose custom pages. So you can set up certain pages of your home screen that will be hidden while you're in focus.
Wow. You know, this really sounds like one of these great things that like very few people are going to actually do.
Why do you have to kill my joy, Brian?
As long as you do it, that's great. It's possible that it's simply because I have become, jaded's not quite the right word, but blasé maybe a better word. There are features that Apple has introduced to iOS and iPadOS in particular, to a lesser extent on macOS, that I think are just super nifty and that I never actually get around to messing with them. They could also be a product of age.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing this for 23 years now, so, you know. Hey, get off my lawn. I don't need any badge notification.
We don't need no badges.
Yeah. So that could be me, but there have certainly been some of those that I don't think other people have been, that a lot of other people have been using is also that it's not just me. And this sounds like it could be one of those things for a lot of folks.
It could be, but I hope that this is something that a lot of people use for one reason and one reason only. If nobody uses it, I'm afraid Apple will take it away.
Yeah, Apple tends to do that.
And then Jeff will be very sad.
Yeah.
Because Jeff will start getting irritated and annoyed by things that he for a long time was not getting irritated and annoyed by.
Yeah, like for instance, back to my Mac. Why did Apple take that away? I'm still annoyed by that.
Yeah.
And I know that part of the reason is that not very many people were using it. But those of us who were using it loved it.
And now we don't have it.
And now we don't have it, right.
Because you people out there, listeners, aren't using the features that Apple gives you that we love.
Listen, our listeners are using all the best features. It's the other people.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, it's the other people who are failing us.
Okay. So tell your friends who aren't listeners, use this stuff or we may lose it. How's that?
Right. Sure. Right. Let's go with that.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, so what else have you been using that you like?
There are more options now in Siri shortcuts, but I can't remember for sure what they are. One interesting one, which was cool for about 30 seconds, is you can have a shortcut turn on background sounds, which is an accessibility feature in audiovisual. It's an audiovisual accessibility feature that I didn't even know about. But for people who need to be distracted from other background noises, it can play things like the sound of a running river, the sound of a waterfall, the sound of rain, things like that.
So like white noise stuff that a lot of people use to go to sleep with?
Yeah, white noise, black noise. In fact, those are options within background noises.
Okay.
And you can now script in your shortcuts to turn that stuff on or off. So, like, just to test it out, I created a shortcut that whenever my work focus mode turned on, it would turn on background noise. Hmm. And then when work focus mode turned off, it would turn it back off again. And like I said, that was fun for about 30 seconds. And then I said, you know what? No, I'd rather have silence.
Yeah, fair enough. But people's mileage may differ.
Yeah.
And there could be a period where
you might want that. And you know, from my time working in disability services at a university, I know that there are people who need that kind of background noise when they're trying to focus.
Sure.
Very helpful to people with ADHD and other developmental challenges. And so it's a great feature for people who need it.
Makes sense.
So there's that.
All right, so we're actually running out of time, so give us some other iOS 15 highlights.
Well, one that I'm going to be trying out later today, hopefully. FaceTime. You can now FaceTime people on Android.
Okay, so is there an Android app that is an Apple FaceTime Android app?
Oh, come on. Like Apple would do that. No, not yet.
So how does it work then?
You use the share sheet. You tap the share icon, and it allows you to generate a link that you can then send through text message, Twitter if you're really brave, or anything else that supports share sheet extensions. You send that link, and as long as they have a browser that supports
H.264,
It is browser-based. It opens up in a browser. It works with Google Chrome, probably Microsoft Edge, maybe Safari. But if you have Safari, why don't you just use the FaceTime app?
Well, there's Safari on Windows.
True that. I hadn't thought about that. So, yeah, there's that. Long story short, it sends a link. It opens up in their browser. And from what I have read but have not yet tested, it allows them to experience FaceTime without FaceTime.
Huh.
So
I wonder how secure it is, though. One of the things about FaceTime is that it is encrypted.
Yeah.
End-to-end. And I guess it could still be encrypted end-to-end, possibly.
I mean, as long as it's using an HTTPS... I would think that it still would be.
So are you going to test this and report on it?
I'll think about it. Yeah.
Okay. You were about to get the buzzer of death.
Yes, I will. And eventually, assuming my webcam and my microphone both work with my Raspberry Pi, I'm even going to try sending a FaceTime request to my Raspberry Pi.
You know, and that will probably be very useful to at least three or four people.
At least. And you know what? Again.
But, there's the crowd of folks who just want to see if they can do it.
Right.
Right.
And you know, there's
ain't nothing
there's
wrong with that.
Like the guy that used a Raspberry Pi to shoot water and flour at people trying to steal his packages.
Right. Are you going to start up a terminal?
God, I would love to. Yeah, I would love to. I have to figure out how I would do it because my arthritis in my hands has gotten more debilitating than it used to be.
Ah.
So fine dexterity is no longer there. Some things I can still do with, say, a pair of needle nose pliers, and maybe a set of forceps would be even better. So I'm looking into it. I'm doing more with Raspberry Pi, and eventually that is going to translate into Maker stuff.
Sure.
So, yeah.
All right, we'll stay.
That's something I thought we would have talked about off air, not on air, but yes, that is my hope.
All right, sweet. Okay, well, keep playing with iOS 15. Maybe give us another report before it comes out.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Let me do this thing first, and that's where I will say that. That's all for this week. That is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on that or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. I once again want to thank LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this particular episode. And remember that you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Jeff, thank you very much for joining me this week, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun, just like last time.
Excellent.
We got to do this more often.
We should do this more often, for sure. And on that note... Oops. I might edit that right.
That sounded like Mac Geek Gabs.
No, that's a TDO. Where is my...
Oh.
Where is... There we go. I'm going to edit all that out and play this instead. So much more relaxing.